RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the special Black Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
You're still playing the drums on Black Friday.
I've been playing all night. And
Beans. You have not stopped playing those drums all weekend, have you? Or well, haven't hit the weekend yet, but
actually last night I did. I watched The Irishman last night with my parents, so that was 3.5 hours.
You know, I have everybody out there. I don't know if you know my dear friend Gigi from, oh gosh, I've known you for how long?
A long time.
A very long time. She's here with me for Thanksgiving, and she's been talking with her husband, Ken, about watching this movie since she got here. Was it good?
Yeah. There's a lot of angles to come at it by. It was, I don't know how necessary of a movie it was, but it was beautiful to watch. Great soundtrack again. I love Martin Scorsese. Al Pacino was unbelievable as Jimmy Hoffa, and for the kind of bedwetting that Robert De Niro does now every day in public, it's hard for me to pay him any compliments. But I mean, Joe Pesci was fantastic. everything was great, but very long. I don't know. You can tell this is a guy like, yeah, I don't know. It's the last go around. Let's make this as long as we can, because it could have at least been 2:45. They didn't have to go 3.5 hours.
It's 3.5 hours long.
3.5 hours. We started watching it at 8:15. We didn't get done until about midnight.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the question on everybody's mind, Frank.
Yeah.
Did they find him?
Oh no, he's done. He's been, well, in the movie they depict a cremation as part of the disposal process, but you can listen to any of the mob interviews on the internet, especially any of the interviews on that Valuetainment channel. Unbelievable. I love everything on that Valuetainment channel on YouTube. They have gotten some amazing of interviews on the subject of La Cosa Nostra, and it's brilliant. It really is, especially when it comes to Hoffa.
So I've never heard of that channel, but now I'm going to have to look it up. Last night, we spent 4 hours watching stand-up comedy. We watched, I forget who the guy was, Glenn Burr? What was his name? That was his
name. Bill Burr?
Maybe Bill Burr. Bill Burr. Yeah. And then we watched two Sebastian Maniscalco hours.
He's in, Sebastian Maniscalco plays Joey Gallo.
No
in,
way!
Yeah, he's got a role, Joey Gallo, crazy Joey Gallo in The Irishman.
What are the chances? But he is so funny. I liked him much better than the other one. My dad.
I don't know what was a hard toss-up.
It was fun. We had a lot of fun. Sebastian is great. Aren't you embarrassed? That wasn't the one we saw.
Embarrassed?
But yeah, he's
well,
great.
That's just what you should be doing on Thanksgivings. And I hope everybody at home is doing their own things, because checking the headlines was definitely not what I did. So,
you know, I didn't do much of that either yesterday, and it was a welcome change. But that means that today we have about 3 topics or so that I would like to talk about on this Friday before we send the weekend off and get ready to begin what will be the last week before FISA release.
Oh, yeah.
Because after that happens, Frank, you know, I will not be seen or heard from anybody but my little room up here.
Yeah, because you'll be reading the Stephen King novel that is The Report.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, one of the things I've been trying to caution people is do not read the conclusion page and expect that is, like, there is so much inside of the report that's not in the conclusions that is still very important to the story.
Well, the conclusion page is what everybody freaked out over with the mid-year exam, right?
Yes, ignoring the fact that, you know, there's a very specific subset of things that Horowitz was tasked to look at in that mid-year exam report. It wasn't the entire investigation. It was a few decisions that they made to see if they were affected by any bias or if there was any wrongdoing. It wasn't the whole thing. So when people are like, the whole thing, you know, was a whitewash, it wasn't. And he found that Peter Strzok was biased in prioritizing the Russia investigation over Anthony Weiner's laptop. Does anyone do you remember that? Or
Yeah.
So there's that. But what I wanted to do is I went back through the archives because one of the people we've talked about on the show quite a bit is Joe DiGenova, right? And he has said some things, and he's also said, like, he said some things that have really come true, and then he said some other things, and we're like, I don't even know if we can trust this guy. But go ahead.
No, correct.
Oh, I always like that reaffirmation. But I have a clip here that I want to play for everybody and you that we were talking about the other day, and here we go.
I don't want them lying to the FISA court the way the Obama administration did. By the way, for the record, I can report categorically that the Inspector General has found that all four FISA warrants were illegal. They were based on false information supplied to the FISA court. And that Michael Horowitz has concluded that all four FISA warrants were illegal from the get-go, which means that Comey lied on the first one. Whoever signed the other three, including Rod Rosenstein, the masterful savant who ran the department like the fool that he was for 2.5 years, they were all false. And if they didn't know they were false, they were so incompetent and stupid. Of course, Rosenstein was just trying to pass the buck because all he could think about was his next job, which he hoped would be a circuit judgeship. But all four warrants were illegal. Now, remember, we've been talking about this for 2 years and came to that conclusion 2 years ago. I'm delighted that the Inspector General has caught up.
Okay. Wow. Joe, can you stick around for with?
Oh, well, I mean,
you can't get more, like, definitive than that, can you?
No, you can't get more categorical than that.
Now, there's more to this interview that he goes through. Do you want to listen to the next little segment?
Sure.
Okay.
Joe DiGenova, and Joe just told us that all four FISA warrants have been deemed illegal. Joe, when was this decided? Why have we not heard anything about this until now? This is big news.
Well, the Horowitz report is done. It's being circulated. So obviously people are talking and stuff gets out a little bit.
What's the
pieces,
date but, on this?
You know, this?
The date on this is August 26th.
Of this year?
Of this year. Okay. And he was right. It was done.
Okay.
It's a no-brainer. Everybody knew that the FISA warrants were illegal. They were based on a false premise. You will recall that when the Bureau, as it was trying to figure out, once now, just remember, everybody has to remember the sequence. When Admiral Rogers went to the FISA court, in 2016 and said all of this spying has been going on illegally, and the FISA court cut off access to these databases where you could spy on Americans. What did the Bureau do when it no longer had its three contractors getting illegal spying information? It went to FISA. It had to figure out a way to spy on the Trump people, so it tried to get FISA warrants. It didn't matter to them whether the information they had going to the court was truthful. So when they went the first time to get a Carter Page FISA warrant, they were denied. Then they got the Steele dossier, and it was granted. Four warrants were granted with the Steele dossier, which we know was a piece of fiction, a piece of Russian disinformation created specifically for Hillary Clinton, the DNC, Perkins Coie, Fusion GPS, Glenn Simpson, Nelly, and Bruce Orr. This is so simple. This is childish. This is so banana republic. And these idiots hire a guy who was at the center of this corruption, Andrew McCabe. I cannot wait until the report of the Inspector General comes out and watch how Brian Stelter and Chris Cuomo and the morons at CNA figure out how they're going to either put him in a box in cold storage for a year or put him on television and ask him questions. Guess what? It's going to be the box in cold storage.
And then how long after that did he tell us all to temper our expectations that nothing was going to happen?
Interview at the very end, he says that he is not sure whether or not there will be criminal prosecutions from it. So he says that, and then later on after that, after he says that on August 26th, he goes out and says that a couple weeks later after some more information came out and he says that John Durham or Brennan is going to have four lawyers. Remember that clip?
Yeah.
Brennan's going to have four lawyers. Comey is going to have four lawyers. And then I guess somebody, I haven't heard this one, but just recently someone said that he was walking everything back and saying that this report was not going to have anything in it. Now,
what has that been? Can you find, was there a clip? I haven't heard that.
I haven't either. And, you know, there's so much disinformation out there right now and so many people kind of freaking out. And a lot of the people like, so there's been like two camps, Frank, right? Throughout this entire process, there's been the optimism camp and the pessimism camp. And the pessimism camp contains some bigger names. The pessimism camp is known for attacking the optimism camp for being optimistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the pessimism camp has now gone on this campaign to say that the optimism camp has just been using this as a way to bolster their like personas over the past couple of years and that they've all been lying to you and they can't wait for them to crash and burn. And like me being in the optimism camp, I'm like, actually, that's like the exact opposite of what I've been doing. I've just been reporting to everybody what everyone else is seeing without doom and gloom attached to it. I mean, there's facts and information out there that back up what Joe DiGenova just said.
Yeah. I mean, to come to the conclusion that a major string of crimes has been committed is not outlandish, and it's actually quite exciting to be able to confirm. I mean, once you know that the FISA warrants were based largely on the dossier, and once we know that the dossier has been largely and actually primarily funded and comprised by the Hillary Clinton campaign and other allies of hers within the government and the intelligence community, then you just put that all together. You put that all together and you say, okay, well, you either have judges that are in on this or they lied to the judges. And that whole scenario right there is how you start this thing off. So obviously, this is a major, major criminal operation to get this conspiracy theory kicked off. And then you just pass the ball off to the media and they poison the minds of the average Americans. Once again, it only ever comes down to whether or not people are confident or optimistic or pessimistic about whether or not there is going to be actual people thrown in jail and people held accountable. As far as the confirmation of criminal activity goes, that's a foregone conclusion at this point. There's no debating that whatsoever. So I don't know. I think that division on this is ridiculous because obviously you would think that everybody wants the same thing to happen, and if it doesn't happen, we would all be equally upset. I don't understand. So
I agree with you there. Like I had a comment from someone on Shem did a couple threads on this New York Times article that had come out, right? And he does a great thread to all the like naysayers that are like saying, you know, all the people that all of a sudden decided that the New York Times is an upstanding publication that everybody should trust with their reporting. So somebody said Horowitz does not recommend for prosecution, even though he has probable cause with it, which is a cover up. Read Sperry's articles. Horowitz already has established his track record. We'll have to see whether mild mannered deep state CIA Bill Barr is holding his feet to the fire. Was holding feet to the fire. And I was like, well, hey, what's your plan when nothing works out? I mean, you can't get more you can't get more negative than that. Like what purpose is this serving? You have no idea what's going to happen. Is everybody all of a sudden a fortune teller? I have this argument with my dad all the time. Nothing's ever going to happen. No one's going to jail. No one's going to be prosecuted. I tend in my heart of hearts to disagree. I really do. Now, whether I'm wrong or not is up to history. But if I'm wrong on that, like, or, you know, what do you do to the people who've been saying no one's going to be prosecuted the entire time and then someone does get prosecuted? Do you, like, destroy their reputation or do you just say, hey, look, we've got something good going on here. This is great. Let's, you know, let's cut this crap and be happy about this.
Well, yeah. First of all, those out there who are are really pessimistic, and they kind of revel in the ho-hum nature of, oh, whatever, it's not going to happen. And they kind of like, it almost becomes a little bit more of a teasing kind of thing for people around, even though you have to imagine that they want something to happen.
Right.
They like teasing people about it's not going to, you would think that instead of the teasing and all that, they would be
organizing marches to the Justice Department in DC.
So, or they'd be preparing for war. Because this means that it's all over.
Yeah, if exactly.
And this it's just the end of the justice system, which means it's the end. It's the end of the last of the illusion of a legitimate relationship between people and its government. So, I mean, this is not, it, no matter what side of the tracks you're on, this is no time to be.
I told you sewing.
Yeah, I told you sewing. But in a way that's a little bit more teasy and mocking. I was like, what are you mocking? Because if this is really over, it's time for us to do things that are a little bit more drastic.
No, and I agree with you. And I've said that from the beginning. If we get to the end of this and there is nothing, there is no accountability, it's over. Like, it's time. It's time to do what Hong Kong is doing.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday they were out there singing and like basically holding American flags and like professing their love for liberty. And here we are with, you know, our politicians saying they want to drop nukes on us for the Second Amendment. There's something a little backwards here, but just to get into, oh, by the way, real quick before I do this, Jan, from American Thought Leaders, you know, Epoch Times, is over in Hong Kong. And he sent me like that clip last night of him in the square, like that, you know, because Epoch Times is based out of China and they're the Falun Gong, and they've stood up against Chinese oppression and communism. And so they're very much involved in the Hong Kong protests, not involved, but covering. And it's important to them. So he went over there for the week to do some work there. And oops, hold on. I'm trying to sit cross-legged on my chair like you hate. And I'm making a big mess.
I don't hate. I just don't understand how it's possible.
You take one leg and you put it underneath you.
Yeah, I know.
And then
there's arms on the chair, and I don't understand the space, and I don't understand the comfortability.
Well, I'm little, so I fit.
Okay.
Anyway, so I, outside of the Epoch Times good work, I did a piece in January. When was this? January 31st of this year, almost a year ago now. There was a summary report that was released by the IG in the middle of this investigation he was doing into FISA on that day, on January 29th, that says this, and I'm going to read it. The title, Findings of Misconduct by Two Current Senior FBI Officials and One Retired FBI Official While Providing Oversight on an FBI Contract. And it says, the Department of Justice OIG initiated this investigation upon receipt of information from the FBI concerning multiple allegations involving an FBI contractor and three FBI officials. The IG found, as a result of conduct by two current senior FBI officials and one retired one, the FBI contractor engaged in certain inherent governmental activities in contravention of the federal acquisition regulations. Additionally, they found that these three FBI officials did not adhere to the OMB policy while managing the contractor. Further, the OIG found that the FBI contractor failed to adhere to personal conflict of interest rules under the FAR. The IG has completed an investigation and provided its report to the FBI for appropriate action. Now, these were policy and procedure errors that they didn't follow, but I did analysis on this and I went through all of these regulations, and the only one that made sense was that this contractor was performing an inherent governmental activity, which would be a counterintelligence investigation function. Which would mean that some FBI contractor that I surmised was Fusion GPS was participating in the FBI's investigation of the Trump campaign. And this was like a follow-up, like a spin-off of how Fusion GPS abused the 702 database. So this was in January of this year. And then another 6 or 8 months went by before we got the end of this thing. So you're telling me all these people out there that are saying there's nothing in here, that none of this stuff is going to be explained in the main report? There's no way. Like, that's why I'm saying, like, you got to read the entire thing. And Horowitz can't go to the CIA. He can't, like, Patrick Howley, of all people, who works for the, you know who he is, right?
Yeah. Oh, no. Who's this?
He's written for Big League Politics, for Breitbart. He does all of those stories about how CPS is like illegally taking kids from their parents. He's been on this kick. He's done a lot of NXIVM reporting too. Mm-hmm. But he writes for the Epoch Times now. And he came out and said like negative stuff, saying like Horowitz is not going to, you know, there's not going to be anything coming from this. This has all been a big charade. And he said that like, I said, well, that's really funny because he's already referred both the former head of the FBI and the deputy director of the FBI for criminal prosecution. And he said, I really hope he takes down James Comey and the CIA. And I'm like, he can't take down the CIA. Like, if you don't even understand what he can and can't do, how are you making blanket statements like this?
Yeah.
He has no jurisdiction into the CIA. But we know, because of Sarah Carter's reporting, that Durham is looking at the Office of Net Assessment, who paid Stefan Halper. And that other whistleblower that was brought up in the Flynn proceedings, Lovinger, who discovered the blanket payments to Halper. Mm-hmm. So next after this is Durham. And there was another clip that I wanted to play for you too, that was from Bill Barr. So somebody had said, you know, I thought John Huber was supposed to be working on this stuff with Horowitz. And he was. And then when Bill Barr did his first interview, which I think was back in April of this year. Was it April? I don't remember.
I don't know.
I don't remember when it was. It was his, he did an interview, I think, with CBS. I always get them confused. But anyway, he was asked about what Huber was doing, and he explains what Durham is doing. And it's about 10 seconds long or so. And I just want to play it for you guys so you can hear it. Oh, never mind. It's not a clip. It's a quote. He says, the other issues that he's been working on relate to Hillary Clinton. Those are winding down, and hopefully we'll be in a position to bring those to fruition.
He's talking about Huber.
He's talking about Huber, because Huber stopped here. I think I have it. Huber stopped working on the Horowitz stuff. It's 36 seconds long. Here we go. Let's just listen to it. And forgive me for not being prepared with this right now.
Had originally been asked to take a look at the FISA applications and the electronic surveillance, but then he stood back and put that on hold while the Office of Inspector General was conducting its review. So he has not been active on this front in recent months, and so Durham is taking over that role. The other issues he's been working on relate to Hillary Clinton. Those are winding down, and hopefully we'll be in a position to bring those to fruition.
So this was the clip that everybody started screeching about. Hey, Huber hasn't done anything.
Yeah, and left out the last sentence completely.
So Huber hasn't done anything really is 6 months ago.
It was June 1st that this came out.
June 1st, this was this interview. So what's that? July, August, September, October, November. 5 months ago, Bill Barr said that Huber put a pause on, what was it, the FISA stuff?
Yeah.
The FISA stuff to clean up the Clinton Foundation area. And that, and while he was doing that, the FISA stuff passed on to Durham, who has now had 5 months to expand his investigation into that as well.
Yes. And in addition to that, two things, Frank. Number one, we know that Durham was looking at this stuff as early as October of 2018 because of the Jim Jordan questioning in the James Baker hearing. So Jim Jordan asks James Baker about I forget which reporter, I think it was, I forget which reporter it was that was reporting on the dossier. And Baker says, I can't talk about that. And his attorney won't let him answer questions. And they kind of press him a little bit. And finally, he reveals that he, Baker, is under criminal investigation for a leak. And they ask, you know, they say John Durham is looking into this. And Jim Jordan's like, you mean Huber? And he's like, no, Durham. And Jim Jordan has no idea who Durham is even, you know, what Durham even, who he is. And he says, Durham? And he makes him repeat it like three times. And then Jim Jordan sends a letter to the Department of Justice asking about who Durham is and what he's doing. This is in October of 2018.
Okay.
So does this make us disinformation agents, Frank? Or are we just reporting, or am I just reporting? You're just, you know, I'm not, you don't do this. So I'm just saying, does this make me a disinformation agent, or does this make me someone who's compiling facts from all avenues and putting them out there?
No, it's the latter for sure. I mean, that when I hear that, that's what I, when I heard that just 36 second clip, I'm saying to myself, all right, well, I know what's been said lately. And now you could put that all in context. It's just like, not only is it not true, but what it says is that, at least based on this one clip alone, I know that prior things that you've dug up has brought this back to 2018. But based on this one clip alone, you've given Durham a half a year of under the radar work.
Not only that, but it's not every investigation where the Attorney General of the United States of America travels with the U.S. attorney to foreign countries to gather information. And another thing that we'll talk about real quick that I think people are conflating are the role of the Inspector General and the role of Durham. So like, people are saying that we've said, and when I say we, I mean those of us who have been reporting on this for however long, that some indictments are going to come out of Horowitz. And that's not true. Like, that's nothing, never something that I've said. Horowitz can't do that. And I've tried to clarify this several times over the past year. Horowitz can make a criminal referral if he finds a law broken. And it's very rare that they even do that at all. So for him to have done it twice in the span of a year is significant. But he makes referrals over to the Justice Department. Then it's up to them to prosecute or not. So this report is a fact-finding report within the constraints of what the Inspector General is allowed, meaning current employees at the department. He can interview other people, but he can't do it unless they do it voluntarily. And a lot of people have said, now Carter Page is trying to hold this whole thing up. Have you seen this?
No.
Carter Page is saying he hasn't gotten to read or talk to Horowitz about anything. And he, because it's about him, now at the very least, he wants to be at this hearing in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Because it's about him. He was spied on. He's had no justice from this, right? Because he maintains his innocence. So he's saying, like, I can't believe Horowitz hasn't even talked to me. And then people say, well, Horowitz hasn't even talked to so-and-so. That means he couldn't have done what he's supposed to do. But people don't understand that his purpose is to investigate how the process and procedure with which the FBI undertook this investigation, not to investigate, you know, what Carter Page's influence in it was. He doesn't right. work for the Bureau. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he didn't need to interview Carter Page to come to the conclusion on facts for this. I understand why Carter Page wants information.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, we all want information. You know, in a big way, we were all screwed over by this. The entire country was dragged through the mud for years. I think we all want the information. So of course, the guy whose name was used to get this kicked off, I understand. But even that does not flesh out when it comes down to what needs to be done in a proper investigation.
Agreed. No, I agree. We'll take a quick break now because we are lucky enough to have Cash Call Mortgage sponsoring our podcast, Frank.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And thanks to them, we have some great news because this is around the holidays, especially. Like, people could maybe benefit from this. You don't even know. until you find out.
Oh, yes. It's a year. It's a whole new year is lay ahead of us, and new goals, new life aspirations that are coming before us. And sometimes you need a helping hand.
Yeah. So if you bought a home more than a year ago, there's a chance that you guys have equity that you could, that could mean cash in your pocket, which is always a positive. So if you have an interest rate higher than 2.99%, which really shouldn't happen anymore right now, especially with the market the way it is, then they may be able to lower your payment and get you the cash you need for the upcoming holidays. They're a direct lender, and they can actually close your refi in as fast as 20 days with no deposit. And if you qualify, they will even pay your closing costs for you. So for a free quote and to see if you qualify, you can visit cashcallmortgage.com/DTL. Again, go to cashcallmortgage.com/DTL. Impact Mortgage Company, DBA, Cash Call Mortgage, NMLS ID 128231, Equal Housing Lender, not licensed in all states, including New York. Sorry, Frank. Offer not available in Washington. So another thing that happened, we'll close the door on the IG for now and just say, listen, like, we've had a year full of information coming at us that indicates nothing but positive momentum. And I am not going to throw all that away over two articles coming out of the Washington Post and New York Times that both say that this report is going to be bad, but then attempt to sugarcoat it to make it good. And I'm not going to backtrack on my gut feeling that there will be accountability for what happened. And if there isn't accountability for what happened, as you and I have both spoken about ad nauseum, people better stop being complacent, get up off their chairs, and do something about it. Otherwise, kiss it goodbye.
Well, first of all, I don't know why the New York Times would be a source of frustration or of dejection for anybody, because they have more to lose from this than most people. I mean, these media outlets have been complicit and helping promote this nonsense from the beginning. They have been the first line in defense of shifting the story's narrative to new places. The New York Times was the one that came out to talk about why the FBI had to do what they had to do, as if it was going to help the case at all. It made a lot of Democrats cringe. Mm-hmm. Before that, the New York Times was the one that came out and helped us pivot, help the nation's conversation pivot away from the dossier once we found out the source of the dossier's funding, to start talking about the cocktail shared with George Papadopoulos in London. So
Which both of them deny.
So it's just that I don't understand why right now when we're
so close,
we're at the finish line, and you know what? Win, lose, or draw, you get to read it in a week and a half. Why the hell would the New York Times, trying to do exactly what they've been doing for years already, why would that all of a sudden have this aura of legitimacy that it didn't have before? I just don't understand that.
I don't get it. I really don't. It's so troubling. It really is, because what it shows in a way is that we haven't come very far. Like, people still believe this drivel, and they still let it drive their emotions. They're not just discarding this stuff. Before we jump into the Flint stuff that broke, there was something that happened over the weekend, or I feel like it's a Monday, right? Gigi's sitting here so quietly. She's never this quiet.
You don't want me talking.
But so they came out all of a sudden, Frank, with this reporting that Gordon Sondland, you know Gordon Sondland, we read his opening statement, we did a bit on him, right?
Yeah.
He is apparently now being accused of sexually assaulting three women during his tenure.
What do you think that's about? You think that's a slap in the face for not doing right by the deep state?
Amen. Absolutely, I do.
And you want to know why? I thought about that too. I was like, wow. Jordan Sondland, he couldn't push the ball past the end zone, into the end zone for these people. And now all of a sudden, he's been completely discredited in some kind of a social wrong kind of a way. And I almost felt, oh, I don't feel bad for any of them, but in a certain way, I'm like, I was saying to myself, you know, this guy did everything he possibly could. He was put in an impossible position where he had to go up there and he was forced to speak out of both sides of his mouth, which negated his entire reason for being there before that committee hearing. Because whereas he knew what they wanted him to do, to say that the president did something wrong, he couldn't say that the president did anything wrong beyond whatever he could presume, which presumption means bullshit. So he was forced to try to help out these people because, while trying to save himself,
right,
which negated the whole thing and ruined the hearing.
Like, for all of the left's complaining about witness intimidation, like, this guy was forced to put the words quid pro quo in his opening statement. He was forced to do it. And he also had to remember things he didn't remember after he heard other testimony. And during the hearing with him, they came out and said that he had a sitting senator, I believe, in Oregon had sent out like tweets and made statements encouraging people to protest outside of his businesses. So witness intimidation, really? So now three women have accused him of unwanted sexual contact.
Three.
Listen, they say that he made unwanted sexual contact with them in business settings and before he became an ambassador. And on one occasion, he exposed himself, right? They came forward by name. They are Portland Monthly magazine owner Nicole Vogel, insurance executive Jana Solis, and Portland political consultant and nonprofit manager Natalie Sept. Now,
wow.
Portland.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
just the line of work that these women are in.
Portland.
Yeah. We got three Christine Blasey Fords
from Portland. I don't know how. Can I say that again? They're from Portland. So. He said there's a story all here, right? And it goes through everything that they supposedly did to him, right? Or he supposedly did to them. And all of a sudden now, before he's confirmed before the Senate to become an ambassador, right? Is he confirmed before the Senate? Aren't ambassadors confirmed?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So they basically don't say anything about this at all. None of it. Nothing. Until all this happens. All of a sudden, he's exposed himself to these people. And these Me Too feminists have chosen right now, after remaining silent for over a year, to step forward.
Well, you can't step forward when he still has a chance to help them out with impeachment. So they all just waited.
Right. Or this never happened.
Yeah.
I mean, the level these people will go to. And no, I mean, I just don't believe this. I feel bad for him. I really do. He might, you know, he refused to lie.
Well, I wouldn't even give him that much. I would say that he may wanted to be able to lie in a convincing way. He just knew that even whether or not he wanted to help the cause of impeachment out and be a good team player for the company, be a good company guy, he just, you have to have some kind of assurances for your own safety. And what's the reason why he would go in there and just lie in one direction and leave no protection up for himself personally? He had to speak out of both sides of his mouth and just hope that he created enough positive momentum for the impeachment cause. But why would he go up there and just throw his entire life away for Adam Schiff?
Not only I agree with you, that could be it. I really do. But at the same time, I also think that there's a chance that he said to himself, because he's a Republican, he donated like $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee. I think he said, you know what? I am not going to be the man who's responsible for the impeachment of the president of the United States because I lied. Because, like, I just don't think he could do that.
Well,
he's suffering.
I didn't know about the donations. I didn't know about his supposed political affiliation, although, you know.
He's a huge Trump supporter.
Okay. Well, admittedly, I did not know that. But at the same time,
even still, it doesn't really.
He was getting his arm twisted. Yeah. Then, one way or another, his arm was getting twisted.
That information doesn't change your analysis at all.
No, and like you said, the use of quid pro quo, the dancing with these bits of terminology and the words he was using, that's one thing. But he couldn't take the ball all the way.
No, he couldn't. I don't think that he could. I personally, watching him up there, I saw him. I just don't think that he could do it. What they wanted him to do. And it infuriated them to no end. They were like, we did the whole bit about them threatening him while they were questioning him. Where they were like, you have a nice family, Mr. Sondland. It's Christmas time soon, Sondland. You remember?
Yeah.
We were making a joke out of it as we were watching this together.
Yeah, now it's Christmas time and he has three sexual assault accusers.
Yeah. I mean, on the 10th day of Christmas, the true love gave to me.
Three sexual assault accusers. it's the way of things now.
I love you. Oh, Lord. Okay. Moving along. Michael Flynn. General Michael Flynn, I should say. I should give him that courtesy. I always do that and it really bothers me. So the government filed the government and Powell filed a joint motion to abate briefing schedule. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means?
No.
It means that they both, Sidney Powell and Van Grack, the special counsel attorney, said to each other, you know what? I think that we should postpone the sentencing memorandum that's due as well as the sentencing because there's going to be information in the IG report that we can use.
Ah, yes. Yes, that sounds about right. It's only a week and a half after. Anyway, they've already delayed. They've found ways to push this stuff off for a couple of years already, so... Why not put the icing on the cake?
Yeah. So what I think personally, that this is a way for the corrupt counsel in the Mueller investigation and the Justice Department to easily cover their asses in bowing out of this prosecution and this plea and saying, oh, wow, we didn't know this. If we would have known this, we never would have moved forward with this prosecution. And just say, we're dropping all charges under the cover of the IG report.
Ding dong.
Ding dong.
What do you think in particular would be the greatest jewel in the crown for the Flynn case with the IG report? In all the things that this report that the Inspector General can put forward that will put forward in a week or so, what do you think the crown jewel could be for Powell and the Flynn case in particular?
You know, there are so many things in there that tie to the IG report, like the first we F Flynn, then we F Trump, like the text messages that'll probably be in there. There's a lot of stuff and I would need to pull up and reread her CERSA reply and her request. Here we go. Wait, I'm going to do it real quick. Actually, I'm not because I can't find it quickly. That's a good idea for me to go through her request for 45 things that the government didn't give her and see which one of those would be in the IG report.
Well, I'm glad I could have been here to help you that.
You
with
did.
That.
It was. I would never have been able to do this without you, as many things in life. So, I appreciate you, Frank. I really do.
I'm glad to be. It's good to be appreciated.
Yesterday, I was saying that to myself. I was like, I'm so appreciative for Frank. I am. I was thankful for you yesterday. Don't let. What are you? Are you mocking me now?
No.
You are.
No.
The Oconus lores will be in there. You know? A lot of things. I feel like I have to really go back in my filing cabinet in my brain, because we went over all 45 of those.
Well, this should be interesting then, because I'd like to keep tabs on that. That's another one. The Flynn case, that's another one.
Yeah, and
it's going to be great to see that wrap up after all this time.
I want that man to be repaid for all of his legal bills. I want him to, I mean, in terms of his reputation, I think at this point, people look at him as a hero for just keeping his composure throughout all of this. I can't even imagine being him. I can't. Gosh. And we've got to interview his family. You know what I really want to do?
Have Michael Flynn, General Flynn, on the show?
Absolutely.
Oh, can you God. That is one show I will be very silent during.
You would be silent?
Yeah.
How come?
I don't know. I'd just be
taking it all in.
I have to take a lot in. And I would, the only time I would speak up is if I had something really good to say. I have to think about these questions beforehand. Say, what are top three questions?
For General Flynn?
Yeah. I mean, that day is coming. He's going to take so many interviews, and I hope he does. I mean, he has to.
You know what I think he's going
to do? He has to start rebuilding. So,
you know what I think he's going to do? This is just my opinion. I think he's going to give priority to people like us and other independents out there that have been doing the work on his case the whole time. Like, I know Dilly's announced that General Flynn has said he's going to interview on his show.
Well, I direct messaged General Flynn maybe about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And even though I'm sure he gets thousands of those messages, he did respond to me once. And I just, you know, little things like, well, when everything blows over, it would be a real honor to have you on the show. I get the feeling that he's going to make himself available.
Yeah.
For people.
I have. You know? I mean, I could probably talk to him for hours. I have so many things that I want to say and ask.
Well, it might be an extended show then that day.
Yeah. Did you listen to the Benghazi interview?
No.
No. No, it was really good. It was really, really good. I'll put it in the show notes for folks. These four three. Yeah. And General Vallely came forward with new information on Benghazi, and that they were given stand down orders the day of that incident. And someone was, it's one of them, William, I'm going to forget his last name. He was a sergeant at CENTCOM. So I'm telling you need to listen to this interview. Lots of comments on YouTube on that one. And I think we're good. We could talk about Peter Strzok, but he just kind of makes me sick to my stomach, and it's Black Friday.
Yeah, the hell with that.
I'm already sick to my stomach with the commercialism. Did Mark Dice do his daily?
No.
He didn't do it?
He did something else.
What did he do?
He did a video, and it had a lot of different things, and it was actually good, but...
Mark Dice, every Black Friday, usually goes to, like, Best Buy or Walmart. And he sits with he drives his truck through the parking lot with his bullhorn, yelling at the people how they're standing in line, like ready to kill each other over a 50-inch flat screen.
Hmm.
You never saw one of Mark Dice's?
The Black Fridays? No. Yeah. And I usually happen upon those compilation videos, but I don't think I ever watched Dice's.
Here, let's listen.
Santa Claus here. To shame the Thanksgiving shoppers.
The Center of Disease Control, the CDC, has discovered that tens of millions of turkeys were infected by a dangerous parasite, quickly devouring the brains of millions of Americans after Thanksgiving dinner. No longer having any brain cells left, the television took over, leading them to retail establishments, leading them outside of their families, outside of their homes, ruining the Thanksgiving holiday. Now, waiting in line to buy more electronic goods, to detach themselves further from reality, going deeper into debt, spending money you don't have on things you don't need.
Merry Christmas to you too.
Happy Thanksgiving, brother.
Happy
planting seeds of sanity. I hope they take root.
You know, and we get a it's funny because this all happens on this grips the country right on the heels of people saying we should not celebrate Thanksgiving. It's a bunch of capitalist bullshit.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they line up for their pink goo. I don't know.
And you know, you always see like at least like some at some point today, somebody getting trampled over or dying or. You know, somebody getting into a fist fight over a pair of sneakers or whatever. So,
yep.
There's that. Well, listen, it was a good show today, Frank. What do you say?
I thought it was great. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And happy Thanksgiving to our audience member, Gigi.
Hi. Happy Thanksgiving.
You don't understand. She's never this quiet. Ever.
Well, she knows she's on set for a major production.
That's right.
Haven't you heard what Christian Bale does when you talk on his sound set?
Oh, good for you.
Good for you.
That's an inside family joke. We say, oh good for you.
I love it. I love that.
Gigi is very important to me. She works with me at Uncover DC. And she does everything. Literally.
Isn't it great being a part of a project, you know, especially like a website? I love websites. I know that they're nothing to be excited about anymore because everybody has a website. But if you have a website and it's run nicely and it has a purpose, oh God, you feel like William Randolph Hearst, and you have your own like media empire. And if it's done right, it's like having a home, like maintaining a home. Yeah. I love it.
It is like maintaining a home, but this Gigi is a. She is a promotion machine. Like social media, you have no idea the amount of, oh my gosh, she spends hours. She shares the heck out of everything. The podcast, the articles. Like, I don't even know how she does it. Thank God for her.
And then Facebook closes me down for a day because I share too fast.
Yes. Like, she's built us up from like zero on Facebook to... I mean, what?
It's one time it actually outdid Twitter, and I was shocked.
The traffic outdid my Twitter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing, given
on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that is amazing. Facebook is a wasteland.
I know. Gigi gets a lot of traction. She does like these watch parties and like these groups and stuff, and it's worked. I mean, people are finding the information, which is all that we care about. I've worked with Gigi for like over 10 years now.
Yes, we're Ron Paul revolutionaries.
Yes, we are.
Well,
damn straight. And I always tell the story of how we got Lee Zeldin elected.
Ah, I love Lee. I watched him grow up. He was a child, and now he's a man.
Lee Zeldin was in Gigi's living room several times.
Wow.
Yes. He was at your barbecues.
I don't remember.
I tried reaching out to him to get him. I forget why it was. I don't know how long ago it was now, but there was a few things I wanted to get him on the show for, and I couldn't get through to him because, you know, he's like maybe one of two New York representatives.
Yeah.
Hey, at least you guys are getting rid of Peter King finally.
Yeah.
I used to be the lone protester for Peter King all by myself holding up signs, you know.
Outside of his office.
And people would look at me like I was insane, but I just couldn't help. I hated him so much.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where it's one of those things where you see somebody like Peter King who has been parking his ass in a seat for as long as he has and doesn't really have to worry about being reelected because the voting base is there. It becomes a little bit just as perturbing to me as or vexing to me as what goes on in states like Utah and Kentucky or Tennessee, where you assume that this voting base is so strong and insurmountably in one area, one place or another, that they would send Thomas Jefferson to the House of Representatives or the Senate, but they churn out people like Mitch McConnell or Mitt Romney. It's like that is what you have spent your majority on? A Mitt Romney? You sent him to the Senate, Utah? You know, it's like you're a reliably red state. Why aren't you sending Patrick Henry to the Senate? Ugh. Find, you know, there's not one Patrick Henry in Utah. You can't send to the Senate.
Ah, the flag.
But one day I'll explain New York to you, because I did run for New York State Senate and I learned a lot about New York and how Republicans get in office. And it's really not the Republicans that are getting the Republicans in office. It's the Democrats. So it's interesting when you find out.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I would like to learn about that.
Yeah.
The amount of signatures this woman had to get.
I can tell stories, believe me. I can tell you stories about it.
Lots of stories.
New York is a hellhole. I'll use a nice phrase.
Yep.
Frank, you're running out of time.
Ugh.
You're running out of time.
Ain't got nothing but time. I spent too much time watching The Irishman last night. I'm all out. It's like, you know, the thing about the Irishman, one more thing. It climaxes 40 minutes before the end of the movie.
Oh.
It climaxes 40 minutes before the end of the movie, and then the last 40 minutes, you're just contemplating the inescapable nature of death. Okay? It's an existential crisis for the last hour. Just letting you know.
Sounds fantastic. I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
The drums. And me, Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will and thanks to Cash Call Mortgage, we will see you on Monday.
Later.
Hey gang, Jerry P. Tuck here, co-host of A Place for My Head. Each week, Brandon Thompson and I are going to be talking about the importance of mental health. We're going to be talking everything from stress, anxiety, different mental illnesses, different chronic illnesses, and frankly, the rigors of everyday life and how we all struggle to get through it. We're not medical professionals, but we are looking to start that conversation that needs to be had about the stigma around mental illness and how it affects us every single day. We'll talk to experts, but at the end of the day, A Place for My Head is all about real people with real stories about real life. Check out A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and myself, Jerry P. Tuck, each week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.